funniest, most pitying little families with only five or six children do with themselves.
They're instant priorities. You know you have to protect them and provide for them.
Giving me a massive headache.
It doesn't take a village to raise a child. It takes an army.
The hospital made us take it home.
We'll look back on moments like these as the happiest in our lives.
It Takes a Parent, brought to you by Matt's Cookies. They're just like homemade cookies with real ingredients. Now also available through Peapod Delivery Service. You can meet Betsy's sponsors at betsysblog.com.
It turns out George Washington, our first president, was also the first rules guy. Do you remember that book that came out a couple years ago, Rules Girls? And it was all about how to conduct a relationship if your end game was marriage and all that kind of good stuff and how women should behave. And it was a huge runaway bestseller, and it was the Rules Girls, or the Rules. And I thought of this as I came across this book by George Washington. It's not really about marriage, but I just use that term loosely. It's just about rules, rules for living. I was visiting friends in Virginia recently, and I actually took my kids out there on a road trip to visit friends. We used to live in Virginia. They were born there. And, boy, that was really fun to do a road trip. It was 11 hours. I confess, I think I set a land speed record between Chicago and Washington. But I think it's kind of fun to just have all my kids in the car, and we're listening to music and watching movies, and my son likes to listen to talk radio. And I like staying in those really inexpensive motels with my kids. We did that to break up the drive because I was the only driver. And I kind of like that because we stay in inexpensive motels with the all-you-can-eat breakfast, which is really sort of sweet rolls and sweet cereals and, hey, whatever, it works. We're on vacation. I think I kind of like that because it's somebody else's mess and somebody else is making breakfast. But there's something about staying in those really inexpensive / cheap motels with my kids that I really like. I don't know. I just get a kick out of it. Well, anyway, so we headed out to Virginia, and I was at one friend's house, and I came across this little booklet. And I had never seen this before, and I'm surprised because I love George Washington. I lived in Virginia for a long time. But it is the Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. Now, this particular book was edited or has a foreword by Letitia Baldrige, of course, America's etiquette expert. And this one was published by the Mount Vernon Ladies Association. Apparently, I did not know this. This is a well-known treasure. It was a well-known treasure throughout the 19th century. And it's a delight to historians of Washington and a few thoughtful souls today. But it's been lost to most of us, rest of us, in modern times. It was completely lost to me. I'm not making this up. It sounds like I'm doing something like, you know, late night comedian where I would give you these 10 rules. No, this is a real booklet. You can get it. Get it through the Mount Vernon Society. You can get it online at Amazon. But it's really, really interesting. What it made me think of is, you know what? I am not paranoid. We are, in fact, living in an incredibly coarse culture. Friends, George Washington was not yet 16 years old when he penned his 110 rules for conduct. Now, he adapted these from a 17th century book of etiquette, but they're just fabulous. And they range from number 50, I love this one, be not hasty to believe flying reports to the disparagement of any. And number 56, associate yourself with men of good quality if you esteem your own reputation, for 'tis better to be alone than in bad company. Wow, is that ever true? Then there's number 11, shift not yourself in sight of others, nor gnaw at your nails. I've got a 15-year-old son who could use that. When in company, I think this is my absolute favorite. This is number 2. When in company, put not your hands to any part of the body not usually discovered. I love that one. There are just so many guys slouching around and, frankly, conducting themselves in a way they ought not, it seems to me. I thought that was really lovely. So throughout the book, you know, there are calls to good table manners. When you sit down, keep your feet firm and even without putting one on the other or crossing them. you know, shake not the head, feet or legs, roll not the eyes. I love that one. I have to give that to my kids. Lift not one eyebrow higher than the other, wry not the mouth, and bedew no man's face with your spittle by approaching too near him when you speak. This is good. Kill no, this is number 13. Kill no verminous fleas, lice, ticks, and such in the sight of others. If you see any filth or thick spittle, put your foot dexterously upon it, if it be upon the clothes of your companions. Put it off privately, and if it be upon your own clothes, return thanks to him who puts it off. You know, just on and on again, just these little manners, but also just, you know, they that are in dignity, this is number 33, or in office, have in all places precedency, but whilst they are young, they ought to respect those that are their equals in birth or other qualities, though they have no public charge. It is good manners to prefer them to whom we speak before ourselves, especially if they be above us, with whom in no sort we ought to begin. Let your discourse with men of business be short and comprehensive. That's number 35. And on it goes. This is just great stuff. And throughout, I mean, it's kind of a little bit funny, obviously, because the language is very stiff. But there are calls to, you know, as I said, good table manners, to prefer, you know, another to oneself, giving up a seat to the last comer, not speaking too loudly, for instance, to stately body language, which means, you know, Washington understood the importance of what his very countenance communicated, and exhortations to good morals for the purpose of benefiting others. That's all in the book, The 110 Rules of George Washington. I love this guy. I think I would have been a really good 18th century matron, except, well, I don't know. I think I would have liked some running water and antibiotics. Friends, you're listening to It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. This is Betsy Hart welcoming you back to the show. As many of you know, I have been gone for 2 weeks because I had my kids with me out in Virginia. So we ran the two-part series from Dr. Paul Randolph about the teen years and surviving them. So now I am back, and I find that I just want to do a whole show as if it were the whole thing were the heartbeat section of the show, because you know what? There's just so many things I've come across just in a couple weeks, news articles and things happening, and this fun thing like the rules of civility and decent behavior and company and conversation. I just thought I have lots of fun things that I want to talk about. So we're going to have an hour of the heartbeat, and I hope you'll stay with me. Lots of other fun things coming up about the real lesson behind this Natasha Richardson's death and why do models look so grumpy when they're on the walkway? So I've just got lots of fun things to talk about. But back first to my friend George Washington. And when I was out there, by the way, if you get a chance to do this, I went to stay with friends down in Fredericksburg. And then we went, which is about an hour south of D.C. And then we went over and we went to the site of George Washington's boyhood home. That was a treat. And what I can't believe, I lived in Virginia for almost 20 years. I must have visited Fredericksburg 10 different times during that time, at least. Never got to see George Washington's boyhood home. And it's right there, just on the outskirts of Fredericksburg. Really interesting. In fact, just in the last couple of years, the actual site of the house has been discovered. They always knew apparently where the land was that they retired, that he grew up on, that his mother retired to for a while before moving to Fredericksburg, but not the actual site of the house. That has since been discovered, and a replica is going to be built. So that was just so cool. And you could actually go down to the river, I guess it'd be the Rappahannock right there, and see where he threw the silver dollar across the river. And apparently that is not myth. The cherry tree, that's myth. But apparently there are other people who have written about watching Washington throw a silver dollar across that river. And it's a wide river. Probably wasn't as wide in his day, but he had quite an arm, apparently. So what really, you know, so much impresses me about, it should impress us about Washington. He was just such an amazing figure. And you know, he was known to be a man of profound dignity and character. And according to historians, he not only strove to live by these rules in this book of these 110 rules, but more importantly, they reflect a character of a man, a young man, who was uniquely cognizant of the importance of the presentation he was putting forward in the world. Washington's commitment to dignified behavior, the self-censure, the restraint, the dignity is the word I keep wanting to use, it brought him to the attention of prominent men at a very early age, and the rest is literally history. In what was still considered a rather rough frontier society, Washington's rules reflected the highest goal for what society should be. Now, I'm not sure we have such goals anymore. You know, flash forward into today's slouching, mumbling, self-centered teens. And I know they had those people in Washington's day make that self-centered all of us. Just consider the debased culture we marinated in. And I think we would all benefit greatly from a consideration of these rules. But here's the problem. Here's what struck me as I reviewed the rules. It's a sentiment of modesty, self-restraint in all things, putting others first, which is, of course, the moral basis for good manners. It's the opposite of today's all-about-me culture. So sadly, you know what? I'm not sure the rules could even get through to most of us. Now, of course, the naysayers are going to say, look, wait a minute, you know, Washington later owned slaves, his family at the time owned some slaves, women of the day couldn't vote, nor did they have equal rights to men, and on it goes, et cetera, et cetera. All true. You know, talk about a coarse culture. You know what? The folks who say that are absolutely right. But here's the response to that. You know what? If these rules of civility could be held in esteem in that day and the following century, then here's my question. What's our excuse in our age of enlightenment that such rules would be largely despised in our own time? Friends, we have no excuse. It's pathetic. Anyway, pick up the book if you get a chance. It's great for your coffee table, and it might be great for your kids. Very, very sweet. George Washington's Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. You're listening to Betsy Hart. It Takes a Parent, AIM 1160 WYLL. Friends, I hope you'll visit me at betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com. You can find out more about my fabulous sponsors. Don't forget, Matt's Cookies. You can now get on peapod.com delivery. Yay! Makes it easier than ever. So be sure to visit me and visit my sponsors at Betsy's Blog. And come right back. I'm going to be talking about the real lesson of Natasha Richardson's death. And friends, it's not about helmets. You're listening to It Takes a Parent.
If you love to travel, we've got a great deal for you. Go to 1160travel.com for some of the best travel rates online. Check out 1160travel.com, all courtesy of Chicago's Christian Talk, AM 1160, WYLL.
Who put real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt, a quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. Who put real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt, and that's why Max is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Not long ago, a customer suggested we sell Matt's chocolate chip cookies in health food stores because of Matt's all-natural ingredients. No additives or preservatives and less than one-third milligram of cholesterol in every cookie. Now, we appreciate the suggestion, but we don't make any health claims for Matt's. Just one psychological claim. Eat a Matt's chocolate chip cookie and you'll feel real happy.
A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Yeah, that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Matt's.
Now Matt's cookies are available via Peapod delivery service.
You are warmly invited to join us at Christ Church of Oak Brook for our special Palm Sunday worship service, April 5th, offering a special dramatic storytelling of the Passion through music at 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. For more information, call 630-654-1882.
Columnist and commentator Betsy Hart sees parents who are tyrannized by experts, anxious and harried by their children to the point of misery, and she faults today's permissive parenting culture. In her critically acclaimed book, It Takes a Parent, how the culture of pushover parenting is hurting our kids and what to do about it, Betsy Hart, mother of four, presents a smart, refreshingly honest, and provocative argument for the crucial role of parents who lead rather than follow. Bill Bennett says of It Takes a Parent, I highly recommend it. Buy your signed copy now at betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com.
Do you ever look in the mirror and think that maybe while you work hard to exercise and be in shape, your face isn't reflecting how you feel inside? Acclaimed facial cosmetic surgeon Dr. Wafi Khanna and the folks at Skinsational MedSpa in Hinsdale can help. You can look more on the outside like you feel on the inside, vibrant, healthy, younger. You know about Botox for frown lines and Restylane to plump lips and facial folds, but they also offer photo rejuvenation. With no downtime, it removes most brown and red spots and improves dull complexions. There's microdermabrasion and pixel resurfacing to treat large pores and rough skin texture. But what's really incredible about all this? Just a little bit of investment on the outside can help you to better reflect your inner beauty and wellness. Now, I'm not going to give away any of my own secrets. I'm just going to tell you that I love the folks at Skinsational Med Spa. Call them now at 630-887-8180. That's 630-887-8180 or visit hannahmd.com.
Hi, I'm Larry Morrow, announcer for Truth for Life. Listen to Pastor Alistair Begg weekday mornings at 7:30 right here on AM 1160 WYLL.
AM 1160 WYLL.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent. This is Betsy Hart. And after not one but 2 weeks off the air, I have such a pile of material I just love talking to you folks about. We're making this whole show one big heartbeat. It's AM 1160 WYLL. Do visit me at betsysblog.com, friends. That's betsysblog.com. I love hearing from you guys. So anyway, I know it's been a couple of weeks now since Natasha Richardson, her tragic death, that she was, remember she was on the ski hill and this little bunny hill and had an accident, fell, hit her head, everything seemed fine, and then within a couple of days she was gone. I really liked Natasha Richardson. I thought she was always so incredibly classy. Well, anyway, I spoke to my friend Lynn just a little while ago. She was at the airport heading out on a Colorado ski trip with her kids, right? And, of course, they said, you know, wear your helmets. I, you know, told her just sort of as a matter of course, don't you know, it just happened, Natasha's death, it just happened. Wear your helmets. And that, of course, in response to Richardson's death. Here she was, prime of life, by the way. And let me tell you something, she was 45, my age. I did appreciate all references to her as being young and beautiful. Really enjoyed that since we are exactly the same age. Anyway, so, you know, Lynn and I, and you know her, she's been on the show. Lynn and I are serious skiers. I was out in Colorado, actually, earlier this winter by myself, well, meaning without my kids, had an absolutely great time. And although only in the last few years have she and I started regularly wearing helmets when we ski, we've skied a lot together. Our kids have long worn helmets. And Lynn and I love to ski together. In fact, for many years we took ski trips with our families or at least with each other and our husbands and so forth. And Lynn's actually the one who got me to work out regularly because it was a ski trip when we turned 40 that we were heading down a hill in Colorado. And we're both fairly strong skiers. And I could not have been in more pain. My thighs could not have been in more pain than they were. Lynn felt the same thing. She's very much in shape, still felt the same thing. So she got back to Chicago. I was living in Virginia at the time. And she just, you know, did all this research and found this weightlifting program we needed to be doing. I started doing it in Virginia. It's called Super Slow. Now I do it here in the Chicago area, or I did it for many years before switching to Elite Fitness Gym. Anyway, had really got some strong leg muscles going. So that just totally changed my skiing. I realize I'm completely digressing here. I'm just telling you, I have a long history of learning things from ski trips, particularly with my friend Lynn. So I'm on the phone, Lynn, as she's actually at the airport about to take off. I'm telling her to wear a helmet. And, you know, she and her family are going to be properly helmeted. That's just the way she is. But, you know, she's kind of safety conscious. But she was quick to remind me. Well, that's why I love Lynn. I love talking to my friends. They're always giving me insights, particularly Lynn in skiing. So, you know, her point was, and she was right, that's not the lesson of Richardson's death. You know, that, oh, we've got to find new ways to be safe, and the Canadian government is going to have new ways to be safe, and they're going to mandate helmets, and everybody now has to wear 3 helmets and all that kind of stuff. And, in fact, by the way, there are studies which show that skiing with a helmet may actually be more dangerous than not because it can cause you to take chances you would not otherwise take as a skier. I know this is true. When I was out in Telluride several weeks ago, I was definitely going down some hills. I might not have otherwise. I was going through trees. Because I had a helmet, and if I had not had a helmet on, I probably wouldn't have done it. And, in fact, I did take a big header and land right on my head and was actually briefly disoriented just for a moment. But I kind of felt I might really be hurt, or if I kind of stood up and make sure everything was still working and stuck together and I could move everything. I did actually lose my cell phone. It's still somewhere in Telluride. It'll probably turn up in the spring. I lost it in that fall. But in any event, Yeah, there's all that, everyone's got to be more helmeted, and this is, and we got to be safe, more safety conscious, and we've got to keep better track of our kids and all this kind of stuff. Okay. And you know that emergency rooms are going to be a lot fuller, a lot more full now and probably for months to come, as every time a kid walks in and, you know, has a headache or bumped his head, the parents are going to rush him off to get an MRI because it's all about safety in the moment. But you know what? That's not the lesson of Richardson's death, and neither is it a fatalism that, oh, when it's my time to go, it's my time to go. Though I do believe that God appoints the hour of our coming into the world and the hour of our leaving it. I believe that's scriptural. But rather, you know, Linda and I talked about how the lesson to the outside observer of this and similar freak tragedies is or should be, you know what, forget the helmets. Wear them. That's great. But each day of our lives is a precious gift. That has to be the lesson. We ought to be living in light of that truth moment by moment, knowing that in a very real sense, our lives hang, I believe, by a God-given and sustained thread. And I'll tell you, I talked to them the first time in the first opening of the show, how my kids and I had headed out to Virginia and back again. And I really was conscious of this. And so I prayed with my kids before we left and when we got back and during the trip and just consistently thanked God, asked God and thanked God for our personal safety. I want my kids to have that sense that life is a gift given to us moment by moment. I sort of think my own mother kind of had that view, but in a weird fatalistic way. I may have shared this on the air before, but I once came home from the playground when I had fallen. It's about eight or nine years old. I had fallen and smashed my head, you know, really hard. I hit it really hard. Straight up, I'd fallen off the swing, and in those days, what was underneath you was pretty much just cement with a couple little wood chips on it. And really, obviously, it's clear now. I had a concussion, so somehow I get home. Don't remember how. But I remembered, and I know this from later discussions of it, and my memory coming back later. But apparently, I stood in front of my mom, who was in the kitchen, and wandered in. I said, Mom, where have I been, and how did I get back? I think I fell. My mother's brilliant response was, go lay down, you'll feel better. Can you believe that? Go lay down, you'll feel better. She happened to be right in that instance. I did lay down, and I did feel better, and I'm still here, you know, 35 years later to talk about it. But needless to say, I'd totally be rushing my own kid off to an MRI, but I think in those days, as a mother of five, you just sort of hope they all made it. That was kind of my mother's attitude. So she definitely had that sort of, we're hanging by a thread. If that thread gets cut loose, I've got four others. You know what I mean? I think that was a little bit of her orientation. But anyway, so, you know, but here's the thing. I often lose sight of that preciousness, that sense of preciousness of life. And you know what? It's easy to do in our culture. Death is most typically something, right? It happens to the elderly, or perhaps we can lay the finger of blame to how and why a younger person got cancer, right? Oh, you know, he was a smoker, she was overweight. How relieved we are, right, to read in the papers that a person killed in a car accident wasn't wearing a seatbelt because, you know, we always wore ours. And how often were we reminded that Richardson wasn't wearing a helmet? Oh, what a far cry from an oh-so-recent culture in which death in the prime of life really was so typical. In fact, it wasn't that long ago that a woman going into labor prepared for her or her child's funeral as well as the birth, because it was so common for women and babies to die shortly, you know, after delivery or during delivery. Now, friends, don't get me wrong. I don't want to bring that back. You know, this is a show called It Takes a Parent, not It Takes a Fatalist or It Takes a Nihilist, right? I love the advancements of the modern world. I'm the first one to be grateful for better living through chemistry. Truly, forget the organic stuff. I want the pretty good-looking fruit with the little, you know, trace of pesticides. I don't care. I want my kids to eat more fruits and vegetables. If it looks better, they can eat it. They'll be fine. You know, I'm not one of these overwrought parents I see running around looking for the safest and most boring playground and terrified of every scraped knee or letting their child out of their sight. And when we go to extremes, it seems to me we raise kids who are not resilient. And that, frankly, has its own risks. But, you know, I'm grateful for what are in the Western world typically lifespans of 40 years over what they were at the turn of the 20th century. 40 years longer we are living. It's just the downside of such advancements, and there is a downside, is that they may make us think we are more invincible. Yet while the outer picture has changed, the underlying truth has not. It's every bit as true today as it was, say, just two generations ago, before the advent of antibiotics and all that other good stuff. that our lives are a daily gift from God. People used to have a better sense of that because they lived with that reality daily. Death and sickness and destruction was all around them. Today, we are so largely insulated from those things. And by the way, don't even get me started on the stress of this economy and what it's causing us. I know. Stress. I'm stressed. We're all stressed. You know, stress is when up to half of your kids died like they did in Puritan days. Stress is literally not knowing if you're going to be eating again, say, ever, because it was a bad crop. That's stress, okay? Let's put things in perspective. Different story, different heartbeat. But at least in those days, as bad as it was, I don't want to return to that. I think some people want us to return to it. I think that's what the global warming hysteria is all about. Again, different topic, different rant. But I don't want that kind of stress. I'm not looking for that. I'm happy for what we have. But the fact is that being in that environment caused the reality of death to be ever-present, or the awareness of it to be ever-present. And now we are so protected from that that it's not. You know, and I don't suggest that this understanding, by the way, should make a loss of a loved one easier, only that in noting Richardson's death to my kids... My kids really loved her in Parent Trap and some things like that. She was so great. I didn't give them a big safety lecture about helmets, or even I didn't even tell them she wasn't wearing one. You know, we talked about the terrible loss to her family, sure, but more than anything, I talked with my kids about the preciousness, the gift, the fragility of life, and that the ultimate lesson here is to not take for granted, but instead to more consciously cherish each and every day we are given. And this goes to something I am not good at doing, which is a call to live in the present. I tend to live in the past. I tend to live in the future. I tend to not be good at waiting on God and not getting frustrated or impatient and just learning to savor today. But that also means living today, not waiting till tomorrow to live because of something that has to happen or be done or a plan that has to fall into place. It's wonderful to be prudent and to be thoughtful about things, but to realize that today is all we ever know we have. And today is the day to act and think and to live whatever God calls us to do in that day, and to thank God for the precious gift of life of that day. So you're listening to It Takes a Parent. I hope you come back more in the heartbeat. We've got grumpy-looking models to talk about. And also, should kids even be having secret diaries? Stay with us.
Answers to the questions you've been afraid to ask. Ask the Pastor with Pastor Gregory Dicko. Weekday evenings from 5 to 6 on Chicago's Christian Talk.
Friends, you know how important physical fitness is, not just to your physical, but to your emotional health and well-being. So then how is your New Year's resolution to get or stay fit going for you? Well, mine is off to a great start thanks to Elite Fitness in Western Springs. Conveniently located in the western suburbs, Elite Fitness offers state-of-the-art weights and cardio and weightlifting machines along with great personal training. Now with their new expanded facilities, there's room for all your fitness needs. But what I love most are the classes. Elite offers a wide range of spin, Pilates, strong, boxing, total body fitness classes, and more, and their instructors are great. For the first time in my life, I'm regularly going to fitness classes several times a week. I'm having fun, I'm in better shape than ever, and when I take a class in the morning, I have a sense of added well-being that lasts throughout the day. Hey, maybe I'll see you there. Join now or find out more at ElitefitnessWS.com. That's ElitefitnessWS.com. Calling all campers and mom and dad, that's you too. This is Betsy encouraging you to enjoy the time of your family's life at Take Wise Family Camp in Branson, Missouri this summer. Choose your 6 days of solid Christian teaching and fun activities for the whole family in a beautiful Hawaii-like resort environment. My kids and I love it, so we're headed back this summer. Check out KQY Family Camp, part of the Kanakuk family of Christian sports camp, by going to my website, BetsysBlog.com. KQY, a family vacation with eternal significance.
If you own your own business and want to let people know about it, then advertise it on this show. It Takes a Parent reaches thousands of moms and dads all over the Chicagoland area. Nationally syndicated columnist, author, and radio show host Betsy Hart can tell everyone about your product or business on her show. Let Betsy's advertising team of experts come out to meet you for a free consultation. Introductory rates available for a limited time. Call 847-472-8942. 847-472-8942. That's 847-472-8942.
If you love to travel, we've got a great deal for you. Go to 1160travel.com for some of the best travel rates online. Check out 1160travel.com, all courtesy of Chicago's Christian Talk, AM 1160, WYLL.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent. This is Betsy Hart. Hey, I hope you'll visit me at betsysblog.com, especially if you want to weigh in on any of the stuff I'm talking about today. I love getting your emails. I love getting your comments on the blog. So do visit betsysblog.com. It's always great to hear from my readers and listeners there. And by the way, a little plug, if you've happened to have seen the new Easy section of the Chicago Sun-Times, they've put yours truly on the cover there each week on Thursday. So do get a chance if you'd like to pick that up, see my column, all that kind of fun stuff. I'm not sure what it's called. I'm not really, there's nothing really about me that's easy, I don't think, but whatever, there I am on the cover of that new section. It's the lifestyle section of the Sun-Times. So lots more to talk about in the heartbeat. I just, you know, I come across this stuff for many times. You folks send it to me, and it's just so fun to share it and kind of get to gnaw on it a little bit. Just get to tear at it a little bit. I like doing that. So in Wall Street Journal this week, I'm going to get to grumpy models and whether or not kids should have their own private secret journals, which I accidentally bought for one of my children. So I guess that tells you where I'm coming from on that. But anyway, in any event, so in the Wall Street Journal this week, a really interesting article. With this debt, I thee wed. This is by Jeff Opdyke, if I think I'm saying his name right. His point is that these sour economies, he just has a book out on this, sour economies can really, really pull couples apart. And what he writes is, if there's a money matter more likely to cause conflict for couples, maybe, you know, even divorce, if there's a, you know, the one big money matters is debt. You know, forget even how we spend it, but it's debt. He writes, being in love and in hock is no way to go through a marriage, because being in hock might just put the kibosh on the love, particularly in the early years. Debt, it turns out, is a leading cause of family strife during the first few years of marriage, according to Creighton University Center for Marriage and Family. I'm surprised they say during the first few years. I would think that as people get older and start their families and buy homes, the tendency would be to collect more debt and to have that be a bigger problem. But in any event, this doesn't mean that debt will necessarily send you to divorce court, but it does mean the accumulation of debt can undermine your marriage and cause the type of discord that can dissolve a marriage. And I don't know about you, friends, but I think we've all known people who have gotten into serious financial stress or just even had real money differences with their spouse, and boy, can that rip people apart. Needless to say, in today's economy, it's worse than ever. That's a particular concern these days as families struggle with the worst economy since the Great Depression. I'm still not sure it's the worst economy since the Great Depression. I remember the early, was maybe mid-1970s, I remember interest rates, my dad talking about interest rates at 21%, and we had higher unemployment, but okay, whatever, I'll go with the thinking here, the mainline thinking here. Anyway, so Fadi Barad, I'm not sure I can say that right, president of the Institute for the Divorce Financial Analyst, let's just leave it at that, a group of financial planners who help couples plan the finances of a divorce, so sad, says that demand for the Institute's services is up 15% in the past year. Ouch! Couples contemplate divorce more than ever when good economies turn sour and finances grow strained, he said. Now, you know what? I've actually seen news reports that say the opposite. Haven't you seen those where couples who were considering divorce can't afford to right now? There's something to be said for that. I mean, historically, that was often the case. You just, you know, there was one farm and one income, and nobody could afford to get a divorce. Remember that great line in It's a Wonderful Life at the end when the housekeeper gives the money to George, and her comment was, I was saving to get a divorce if ever I got married. I don't know. But anyway, so I've definitely seen the opposite of that. But nonetheless, this is very interesting. So that certainly financial stress can blow marital conflict, you know, out of control. So here's what the author offers and has found in his research, in case this is helpful to you, if anybody out there is going through this, and my guess is a lot of you are going through it. To deal with that effectively requires some effort from you and your partner, he writes. The goal is to determine how you employ debt in your life together, the rules by which you use debt separately, and your plan to pay it off so that it never has a chance to corrode your relationship. Now, FYI, this is all stuff that should be decided before you go into marriage and before you have a tough time once you get there. At this point, could be a little bit late, at least to figure out the debt end of things. But go ahead and give it a try, and I will be posting this at betsysblog.com. So it has some good questions, right? What's your debt philosophy? For couples who regularly struggle managing their debt, start by formulating a debt philosophy. My debt philosophy is shoes are off budget, especially if they're my favorite brand, Donnie Pliner. But that's the weird thing about not having a husband. I don't have anybody to ask about this anymore. I can just get into trouble all by myself without having to include somebody else in the problem. But in any event, this is nothing more complicated, he writes, in devising a financial mission statement, the structural foundation of your family's beliefs when it comes to debt. It needn't be profound, just something simple like the following. So here's for you guys considering marriage or kind of looking at your debt or how to handle it. Quote, we agree to live below our means, not to pursue material wants without the money to afford them, never to use emergency savings for consumer purchases, and to take on debt only when it benefits the family's long-term goals or needs. I don't know. That sounds a little constraining. I don't think there's a lot of room for new Donnie Pliners under that orientation. But like I said, I'm single. What do I know? Let's see. Now, don't just adopt the philosophy above and call it done. Every family has its own specific needs, so fashion your own philosophy together. You'll want to answer questions such as, will we pay cash for everyday purchases or maintain a monthly balance on a credit card? Will we pay off our credit card every month, or are we comfortable carrying a balance? And if so, for how long and how big? Will we refrain from spending more than our monthly income, or can we occasionally overspend to afford a big purchase? I don't think I answer those questions correctly in my own life, but it's a little bit late for me. Save yourselves. Anyway, the author writes, will our savings accounts remain untouchable except for emergencies? These are all questions you're supposed to ask each other before going into a marriage. And again, I'll be posting this at betsysblog.com. For instance, he writes, emergency savings could kick up to $1,000 to help cover the cost of vacation. The family's monthly finances can't cover loans so long as it doesn't push the account below some minimum level. So if you decide what your levels are going to be, you might say, well, we can go this far for this reason. Then he says, don't massage your debt philosophy just because it doesn't fit your needs at the moment. Ooh, I don't like that. I like to sort of fit my needs at the moment, and that's how I decide how I'm going to be dealing with debt. See, this is why I need a husband. Somebody needs to save me from myself. Anyway, remember, you designed this in a sober moment, so don't renege when you're drunk on the thought of spending on some particular want. Oh, come on, that's not fun. Then how will you use your debt? And it goes on lots of other questions to ask for. For instance, of a problem. It's a Friday night and you want to eat out and you're choosing between the pricey sushi joint you're craving and the much cheaper cafe. You're carrying a combined $25,000 on two or more credit cards and you think to yourself, what difference is another $100? That, he says, is the beginning of the end. Okay, that's an example of how I live my life. Huh? So sad. So then he goes into good debt versus bad debt, and there's a whole book on this by Jeff Opdyke, Financially Ever After, and it does sound like a really, really good thing for anybody who's either in marriage or in a difficult time right now, or if you are contemplating marriage. These are all things to set out ahead of time. I don't know, when I got married, we just, neither one of us had any money, so it just didn't seem to be a problem. I don't know, maybe there's something to be said for the spiritual value of poverty, because now, I know, things have really changed, and it just seems like no matter how much money I have, I always seem to be spending just a little bit more. What's that great line from David Copperfield? I can't remember the character's name, but it's this fellow who's always getting into trouble with money, and he says something like, I wish I had it in front of me, something like, income, 20 pounds, expenditures, 19 pounds, 10, result, happiness, income, 20 pounds, expenditures, 20 pounds, 1, results misery. And there is a lot of truth to that. So do check it out. It might be really, really helpful. The book is Financially Ever After, and I will have that posted on my website, betsysblog.com. And do pop by there to get a chance to look at that, because that is something that I think a lot of people are experiencing right now, is some trouble with debt, and not just how do we pay our bills and get through this month, but how do you keep that from really wrecking your family? And I suppose what it comes down to is making sure that things do not control you, that you control things and you use them and enjoy them, but are not controlled by them. And I have a lot to learn in that area, especially when it comes to shoes. So speaking of purchases, which I guess is what debt is sort of about, I accidentally bought something for my child the other day, and I didn't mean to. She ordered this book on a book ordering thing they can do at school, The Dog Top Secret Locking Journal, Confidential. And you know what? She brought it home, and I got to tell you, I don't like it, friends. I don't like it at all. The first page is, can you keep a secret? We dogs made this journal just for you. It's a place to keep all your thoughts and secrets. That's why it has a lock and key. Let's keep our secrets just between us. If you agree, put your paw print in the empty box at the bottom of this page, or just sign your name if you don't have a paw. Then, dear secret journal, it starts out, thank you for keeping my secrets under lock and key. I talk to my parents about a lot of things, and I talk to my best friends too, but there are some things I only want to tell you. For example, and lots of pages of things to write your secret innermost thoughts. Friends, I don't like this. I think it takes a parent to help a child, and I think the kids need to be encouraged to talk to their parents about everything, and I think parents need to dig when their kids don't tell them everything. Doesn't mean we have to be a big snoop, doesn't mean we have to be a police officer, but it means our kids, I don't think, have a right to privacy. Because privacy just gets kids into trouble. It doesn't mean that they don't have their own lives or their email accounts or all that kind of stuff. But it sure means that I have the password to all those things. That's how we keep our kids safe. It doesn't mean I'm following them around or following up on them every minute of the day. It means I darn well have the right to, and I may even in some cases have the responsibility to know what they're up to encourage them that I'm their ally, I'm their friend, in the best sense of the word, not in the sense of, you know, I want to be a pal, but in the sense of I'm on their side. I'm somebody that they can come to. I'm somebody they need to come to. And they need to get in that habit. And I really don't want any of my kids writing secret thoughts in a secret journal that I keep don't have access to, because the journal can't help them. I can. I'm their parent. That's the difference. So more on this when we come back after the break. And then a little bit on those really grumpy runway models. Come back to It Takes a Parent.
Chicago's Christian Talk includes New Life Live with Stephen Arterburn. Learn more at newlife.com and listen weekdays at 1.
Do you know that a huge percentage of illnesses are because of stress? I believe it. Look, I used to think a massage was a rare luxury to be enjoyed only on a vacation or for a special occasion, but no more. Not since I've been going to Massage Envy in Western Springs. Now, massage is an affordable, regular part of my wellness program. Massage Envy of Western Springs will show you how consistent massage can lower blood pressure and stress, improve your circulation, and make you feel oh so good. And in these tough times, you need something to affordably feel good about. Massage Envy is open late, so you can go after the kids are in bed, or you can walk in anytime. Your first massage is only $49, and a membership at one Massage Envy is good at them all. My Massage Envy in Western Springs is a little oasis for me. And for this single mom of four, it's not a luxury, it's a necessity. Call 708-784-ENVY. That's 708-784-ENVY to book your first massage.
Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Math. A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookie? Math. And that's why math is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Before you decide to move out of Chicago, better check the stores where you're going to make sure they carry Matt's chocolate chip cookies. Matt's is sold in a lot of places, but they're not everywhere, like in California, for instance. So if you're offered a good job in California, better think it over. A career is one thing, but giving up Matt's chocolate chip cookies? Now that's serious.
quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Yeah, that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Matt's.
Now Matt's cookies are available via Peapod delivery service.
Are you tired of struggling with the same problems year after year after year? Have the addictions of alcohol, drugs, spending, or overeating become too much for you to handle? Celebrate Recovery, a Christian-based AA-type program, meets every Monday night at the Life Changers Hoffman Estates campus. Stop the madness and get into a safe, confidential atmosphere centered on 12 biblical steps to overcoming the addictions in your life. You do not have to live with addictions. Come to the Life Changers Hoffman Estates campus this Monday at 7 p.m. and start your journey to freedom.
Calling all campers, and Mom and Dad, that's you too. This is Betsy encouraging you to enjoy the time of your family's life at Take Y Family Camp in Branson, Missouri this summer. Choose your 6 days of solid Christian teaching and fun activities for the whole family in a beautiful Hawaii-like resort environment. My kids and I love it, so we're headed back this summer. Check out Take Y Family Camp, part of the Kanaka family of Christian sports camps, by going to my website, betsysblog.com. Take Y, a family vacation with eternal significance.
AM 1160.
Hey friends, welcome back to It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. So as we left out of the show, I was talking about the dog top secret locking journal, and that this is supposed to be confidential and kept away from parents. And it's just the beginning. This is for a little child. This is for a second grader. And this is the whole idea that the kids are supposed to pour their thoughts into these journals. These pages can't help them. These pages can't help them think clearly about these things. These pages, these empty pages that they'll fill up, can't help them reflect. These pages can't draw them to God. I mean, these, you know, I think it helps when we get older sometimes to journal our thoughts when we're adults, because that gives us, hopefully at that point we have a way to, we've learned how to reflect, we've learned how to think through things. But as a child, these are just, and it's innocuous enough. I mean, I'm not going to have a heart attack about it. You know, you sort of write your stuff about your crush or whatever's going on in school. I just mean that it's just indicative of our culture, you know, that they just want these kids. It's all about you. It's all about, you know, mom and dad, there's lots of stuff they can't help you with, but that's just bologna sausage. Of course, there's lots of stuff mom and dad have to help you with, whether the kids know it or not. So anyway, this is just a little second grader's journal. Okay, maybe it's not that big a deal, but it grows into a bigger deal, because what happens then is you start getting the idea of privacy online in particular. And I know I was standing over my daughter's shoulder when she was online several months ago. She was on the computer, and the computers in our house are in very public places. So I walk up and I'm standing over her, and I see her write in an IM exchange POS. Of course, that means parent over shoulder. If you don't know all that lingo, I'm sure I'm missing things. You need to look that up. In any event, so parent over shoulder. So I lean down and said, well, listen, as long as I'm already here and I'm in on the conversation because I'm over your shoulder, you know, let's see what else you've been talking about. So I, before she could exit, I read the whole IM conversation. It was perfectly fine and appropriate, but it was just kind of funny. She just kind of wanted to shut me out. Now, I am not an advocate of necessarily going into every email conversation or anything like that, but I am an advocate of knowing what our kids are up to. So friends, as an example, they should not have an email account to which you don't have the password. You've heard me talk about this before on It Takes a Parent. But they shouldn't, even something like Facebook. Now, if you're not on Facebook, you need to get on Facebook, moms and dads. It takes a parent to be on Facebook. I'm convinced of it. First of all, it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of friends my age, sort of the, I don't know, they're now being called the pre-AARP set. I have a lot of friends my age who are on Facebook, and it's fun to share all that good stuff and you know, what's going on in your day and so on. So that's really, it's actually fun. And people in their 40s are the fastest growing segment of Facebook, and it's a great way to keep in touch with people and all that good stuff. So go on Facebook, okay? But if your kids are on there, you have to be on there and make, I know some people who don't allow their kids to be on Facebook. I think it's a tool, like anything else. It's a tool that has to be used wisely. So get on Facebook, especially if your kids are on there, and make sure that they friend you. That means that you get to go onto their website. Yeah, they can go onto yours too, but you get to go on their website. And I actually had a friend who recently said, oh, you know, so-and-so, my child is on Facebook, but she doesn't want me to friend her, so I'm not going to get a Facebook page because she won't allow me to be her friend. And I kind of thought, wow, that doesn't make any sense to me. Your child shouldn't be on Facebook unless you are friending her so that you can see her page. And by the way, watch that closely. There are a lot of potential issues there for later. You've got photos, all kinds of things. It used to be that when you behaved badly as a teenager and did just stupid things, I'm not even talking about drugs or sex. I'm talking about just goofing around at a party in a way you wouldn't necessarily want people to know, that used to be just gone with that evening. Not anymore. Now, as we know, it can be texted and pictures sent and put up on Facebook on somebody else's website. I actually had another guy tag me in a photo from when I was in seventh grade. It was just a school photo, so it was fine, but I looked awful. I really thought those days were behind me, but no. So all that stuff comes back to haunt you. There's no such thing as a boyfriend you're never going to hear from again. All that kind of stuff, forget about it. Everything you do now is with you for life. And, you know, for me, I don't really like it because seventh grade photos of me turn up. But as a mother, I absolutely love it because I can tell my kids, whatever you do, sweetie, it is going to be with you forever on Facebook and elsewhere, so pay attention. So anyway, that's one good reason to be on, is to help your kids kind of think wisely about not only how they behave, but how that behavior might get back to them in their future and affect them and all that kind of stuff. But mainly, just you want to monitor them. You want to be on top of what they're doing. You want to be able to engage with them, talk to them, be a friend to them, be on their side, and let them get a sense of that. You're not out there to crush their good times. You're out there to help them learn to think wisely about the world. And if they are in a secret world of their own, whether it's with their friends on Facebook or an email account you don't have access to, or even a little second grader writing in her, you know, top secret locking journal, even if it's one of those things, You can't get to them. If they've got a secret area of their life that's a part of their life that you, as their parent, the person who loves them most in the world, cannot help them think wisely about. And that is a mistake, because it takes a parent to help a child learn to grow up and think wisely about his world. So, friends, make sure that you get involved in your kids' lives and in their passwords and on Facebook if you're not there already. You're not a spy. You're their friend in the best sense of the world. And if they don't like it, feel free to say to them, honey, I don't care if you like me when you're 13. I care if you like me when you are 30. So now onto those grumpy models. And this was in the Chicago Sun-Times this week. It's an article by Sue Ontiveros. And I thought she made a really good point about what goes on with these, you know, the questioning. What in the world are those grumpy models? What in the world are those grumpy models all about? So they've got everything. They're beautiful. They're skinny. They're wearing these fabulous clothes. And in essence, they're grumpy when they're walking down the runway one way. And what she said, or the catwalk, whatever it's called. And her point was that historically, apparently, this was not the case. As recently as the 1980s, they would show some personality, but now they're these amorphous characters. And designers will say, because it's about the clothes, it's not about the model. But if you look at these, I mean, they just look nasty, these ugly, pouty faces. And I have told my son since he was 2 years old, he would look at magazines with those pouty girls on the cover, the angry pouty girls, I call them. And I would say, you know what? If a woman's not smiling, she's not pretty. And here's my thinking behind that. And you notice this too, even in the swimsuit model, Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. If you look at older photos of, say, Christie Brinkley when she was a model in the late 70s, they're smiling, they're clothed for one thing for the most part, they're also smiling, they really have personality. If you look at the models in recent years, they're almost always very grumpy, very those mean, nasty, pouty looks, I call them. You can't see somebody smiling, and for some reason, that pouty look, the more pouty they are, the more sexually provocative they pose. Now, try, because I have tried this, so I know it cannot be done. If you have a big, fun smile on your face, you literally cannot do one of those overly super sexy, nasty, pouty, provocative poses. You can't do it. You cannot make your body do that really overly provocative pose while you yourself have a big smile on your face. It's just, you just can't do it. It's physically not possible, or almost impossible. Maybe somebody can do it. But So this has something to do with this nasty, pouty, over-sexualized culture we have now. These girls on Sports Illustrated basically aren't wearing any clothes anyway, but on top of that, they've got this really pouty, weird sexual look. And it used to not be that way. You could be happy and beautiful and sexy and show it all, show all that. But now it's the more sinister, sexy look goes with this pouty, nasty expression on one's face. And the two really do go together. Keep an eye out for that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And that's why I told my son, if a woman is not smiling, she's not pretty. And I stand by that to this day. And the more I see on this, the more I see these pouty, nasty girls on the catwalks, the more I know that I am right. And boy, the cover of the one on the Sun Times this week, she just looks like somebody wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley. So more about the coarseness of our culture, which brings us back to if only we had those wonderful rules of civility that George Washington gave us. Friends, thanks so much for joining me this week on It Takes a Parent. I hope you'll visit my blog, betsysblog.com, where you can look at all our great sponsors. Don't forget Matt's cookies. You can get them on peapod.com, which is so cool. Join us again a week from now. We'll have lots more to talk about in the heartbeat section of the show and more. But for now, from all of us at It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL, this is Betsy Hart saying thanks so much for joining us and have a great week.
Hello, I'm Dr. Bill Winston. Start your weekday mornings off right. Listen to the Believer's Walk of Faith Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. here on AM 1160 WYLL.
Do you ever look in the mirror and think you need a lift? That maybe while you work hard to exercise and be in shape, to eat well, to look good for your age, to be healthy, your face isn't reflecting how you feel inside? Acclaimed facial cosmetic surgeon Dr. Wafi Khanna and the folks at Skinsational Med Spa in Hinsdale can help. Today there are so many wonderful enhancements available to you with little or no downtime and no surgery. And they can help you to look good on the outside like you feel on the inside, vibrant, healthy, younger. Dr. Hannah is a leader in treatments like Restylane to fill deeper facial lines, Botox to soften them, and the amazing Skin Tightener Accent. What's really incredible, just a little bit of investment on the outside can help you to better reflect your inner beauty. Now, I'm not going to give away any of my own secrets. I'm just going to tell you that I love the folks at Skinsational Med Spa. Call them now at 630-887-8180. That's 630-887-8180. Or visit HannahMD.com.
Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt's. A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. Who puts real chocolate in chocolate chip cookies? Matt's. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Most things today seem to be mass production and speed. In the big cookie companies, for instance, the cookies race along at 35 miles an hour so they can keep up with production. But at Matt's, we do things nice and slow. That's because it takes longer to make Matt's cookies with all natural ingredients instead of artificial ones. But while Matt's cookies may be made slow, boy, do they get eaten up fast.
A quarter pound of real chocolate in every single pound. And that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around. Yeah, that's why Matt's is the best tasting chocolate chip cookie around.
Matt's. Now Matt's cookies are available via Peapod delivery service.